Hello, Internet.
It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hi, everyone.
Dave.
Hello, Internet.
And we start every week with Good Thing. Craig does that.
Ugh, that felt so empty. Oh, I miss Tori.
I was expecting Dave to do like a minute and a half long one like he usually does.
No, he only saves those for when Tori's here. My good thing this week is a video game, which I think Dave might like. So here's one for your list. It's called Monster Sanctuary. It is Pokemon with Metroidvania combined in POG form.
Wait, so like HMs are movement?
No, it's not items like that. You're a monster collector, as you frequently are in these games, and the idea is that the encounters that you have out in the field can grant a passive ability that might give you some sort of movement thing. So it might let you hover for a little bit, or it might let you break open certain blocks, because it is a 2D Metroidvania, so being able to break certain blocks or maybe swim or do that sort of thing. Those are the abilities that you would get. But the battle system is closer to something like Pokemon. You have a team of three monsters, and they have a different moveset that you unlock. The neat thing is that each monster has its own skill tree, and you get to dictate where those skill points go. It doesn't have anything to do with the passive Metroidvania type style. Each creature has that built in. Nothing special you have to do there. But the combat also has a decent amount of variety. So I end up making a nice debuff team that's focused on, debuffing the other team and doing lots of damage that way. But there's lots of different combinations what you can do. There's over 100 different monsters that you can collect and train, and like I said, the skill system is nice. You get a party of three, that's what you use for combat. You have a main party of six monsters, so you have three that are, I guess, on the sidebar that you can pull in easily. All of them gain experience, so it's not like you have to like, oh, I gotta work on this team if I want experience. No, the game is super nice and generous with how you can do things. Apparently, I didn't hear about this game until recently. This is like 4 years old. Like, I don't know how I haven't heard about this, because I love Metroidvanias. I'm a fan of Pokemon.
Name
sometimes.
One.
Oh no, I'm drawing a blank. Vania Metroid. Anyway.
So you said this game's 2D?
Yeah, so anything that you're used to from
on.
Like Super
I
Metroid.
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
Which 2Ds is it?
It's the like Metroid, Super Metroid, where you're scaled.
So X and Y?
Yeah, X and Y.
Okay. See, I was just thinking about this. We have a lot of games like Metroid games, classic 2D platformers like Super Mario Brothers. They take place on the XY plane, right?
Right.
And then you've got like Legend of Zelda top-down games like that are on the XZ plane.
Yep.
Are there any games on that take place on the YZ plane?
Isn't that the same thing?
No, Z is depth, X is length. So like the game would actually be like a vertical,
like a vertical
line,
right? Yeah.
And then you would be moving forward, and you would see the depth. It'd be like a 3D game. Without the X dimension.
There was a game that I recently was my good thing called Wall World. That is one of them. It's mostly about
it
going
takes place
up and down
on the YZ plane.
Yes.
Huh.
Okay, sorry, Dave. Right. I think the game you want is Fez.
Well, that has all three.
Well, all right. That's actually a really good point, because Fez takes place on the XY plane and the ZY plane, which is what I meant to say before. XZ is like Legend of Zelda. Yeah, Fez takes place on the XY plane and the ZY plane, but not at the same time.
So anyway.
That's a good point.
Monster Sanctuary is quite good. I think you might enjoy it. If you like Metroidvania type exploration and style in your game, this could be one for you. If you're okay, I will say the combat is a little bit slower, so if you're expecting something like modern Metroidvanias like Hollow Knight or something like that, which I guess isn't that modern, but very fast paced, it doesn't quite have that because of the battle system. So Thankfully, the game also doesn't put a ton of creatures in every single screen. It's typically each map segment might have one, maybe two encounters, and you can easily go past it. There's monster abilities that let you just ignore it. So if you get tired of fighting, you're like, nah, I'm just going to skip these. It's cool.
Just don't walk in the grass.
Yeah, exactly. So monster
don't let anyone look at you.
Quite good. I'm about to beat it now, but highly recommend it.
Well, hopefully not like right now, because we're recording.
Oh, no, you're on to me.
We got to pause the episode. Hang on. All right, future Mike, Craig just finished the game. You can cut back in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, Dave's actually editing this one, so.
Okay, future Dave.
There's going to be spoilers.
Well, I can't edit it. There's going to be spoilers.
You're not going to read the rest of the book from now on. Like, this is it. This is all you read.
Yeah. I mean, that was my plan. There was a pretty good, like, ending on Chapter 10. Getting ahead of myself. But, yeah. It pretty well finished then. Right?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
It has the proper ending that most of the Cosmere books have. That last chapter. And we'll get to it. It definitely has that.
Dave, have a thing. Make it good.
Yeah, all right. So, I've mentioned before as a good thing, Insane in the Rain music. And this dude, awesome saxophone player, rearranger, does a lot of, like, Pokemon stuff, but wide variety. Really nice, jazzy saxophone.
Pokemon, never heard of it.
And it's like Monster Rancher, but an RPG instead of Metroidvania. Wait, what game?
Monster Sanctuary, but go ahead.
Monster Sanctuary. Anyway, so I was listening to music by Insane in the Rain Music on my favorite music streaming platform that doesn't pay us money to advertise for them. And a song came up from a game that he composed and actually was just released like a month ago, very recently. It is called Tyrion Cuthbert, Attorney of the Arcane.
Oh, yeah.
And it's literally just Ace Attorney. They're not ashamed of it. They lean pretty heavily into it. Like, the gameplay is very much Ace Attorney, but it's its own original story and characters. But
He even slaps the podium or whatever. There is a slap, isn't there? Double-handed.
Yeah, the two.
Yes.
Yeah, the straight-up Phoenix Wright counters slap.
What does he say instead of objection?
Oh, no. He says objection.
He also says objection. But he does say other things like, not will remain concealed. Stuff like that. Because the game also has magic in it. And it's really cool because they drew a lot of influence from Dungeons & Dragons. And there's even like a part where you have to look at a map of the crime scene. And the map is drawn like it was ripped straight out of the Dungeon Master's Guide. Like, it's, and you're like, and you have to look at rules of the spells, like what, like the effects and the components and things like that, and use those to try to contradict people's statements. It's really cool. So if you're a fan of Ace Attorney, it's like, it's very much just like that, but lots of Dungeons and Dragons references too.
I cast Featherfall and then climbed up the wall. Objection! That wall has a DC 60, and Featherfall doesn't help with climbing checks.
DC 60, wow.
Stuff like that. You basically just gave away the last puzzle of the whole game, but alright.
Aw, way to go, Mike.
You're welcome. Now you don't need to play it.
Really lovable characters, too. In fact, if you read the credits, there was a waifu consultant or waifu coordinator or something as one of the roles in the credits. So... take that as you will. But yeah, great characters. Story's pretty fun. And it plays a lot smoother than at least the Phoenix Wright games. I only played the first three Ace Attorneys. So I'm not sure what like quality of life improvements the series got as it progressed. But they definitely strove to iron out some of those bumps in the gameplay when they made Tyrion Cuthbert. But yeah, that's one of three games I bought in the last couple years. Based purely on being a fan of the composer. The other two being Sea of Stars because of Yasunori Mitsuda and Snake Pass, composed by David Wise. Tyrion Cuthbert, Attorney of the Arcane. You should check it out.
Okay, I think that means it's my turn. Does that mean it's my turn?
You can take a turn if you want, Mike.
Yay! So my good thing this week is I just got done rereading a comic series that I really, really enjoyed back when it was first
White
coming
Sands?
Out. No. a good one. I really enjoyed it back when it was coming out. I don't remember what year it was, but it's been out for a while. It is Rick Remender's run on Uncanny X-Force.
I don't know that one.
Is that the one with Cable?
No. Most X-Force versions have Cable. This one does not have Cable. This has Archangel, Wolverine, Psylocke, Deadpool, and Phantom X.
Well, and Wolverine then, and Deadpool?
Yeah.
It'll never
you can
work.
Combine those two characters. I didn't actually. How did Deadpool end up in like a mutant team?
Well, he's a mutate. He's not a proper mutant, but he gets caught up in X-Men shenanigans now and again.
Isn't like
okay
the blood or something that he got was supposed to be from Wolverine or something?
Something like his powers are derivative from the research that led to Wolverine, mm-hmm. or. That they got from Wolverine, I should say, because Wolverine predates the weapon program. But yeah. Anyway, comic book lore is complicated. A decent chunk of this is about like digging back into Age of Apocalypse stuff and like what happens if Apocalypse's followers try to clone him and the ethics of murdering someone so they don't kill other people in the future kind of thing. Anyway, really, really good comic series. Uncanny X-Force, the one specifically written by Rick Remender, because there's a later run that is not Rick Remender, that I have not read, and I have no idea of its quality. Thus ends Good Thing.
Now on to Even Better Thing?
Sure. I believe we're doing Chapters, Mike, next, right? Or do we want to do Chapters, Dave? Or do we want to do Chapters, Mike, and Dave?
I think we do Chapters, Mike, and Dave.
I disagree. I think we should do Chapters Dave and Mike. And here's why. I didn't read the chapters this week, so my bullet points are going to be really awkward. So I'm going to need Mike to clean them up and explain them.
I read the chapters earlier today, like a few hours ago. But I read the last batch of chapters approximately 3 years ago at this point. It's been a while since we last recorded.
So you don't know the names, but you know at least what they did in these particular chapters.
These are the names.
As long as you know Nomad and Auxiliary, I think you're good.
Okay. So Dave, you want to give me some bullet points and I'll try to fill things
How
in?
How come Craig gives Auxiliary the honor of saying his full name, but he won't say Silfrenna?
Silfrenna.
All right.
Numuhuka Makiaki Ayalunamore.
No. Refuse. Rock. I heard rock. You said rock. That's what I heard.
There is a reference to rock in these chapters.
Airsick Lowlander.
There's a reference to Stew Pickles from Rugrats, and I thought that was kind of out of the blue.
Well, he's awake at 2 a.m. making pudding because his life is out of control.
I thought that's like the ultimate Rugrats meme that survived 20 years.
Oh, it's like the one joke from Wayne's World that survived is, if it's not from the blank region of blank, it's just sparkling blank.
All right. So we're going to cover chapters 6 through 10 of The Sunlit Man by... You know what? If he's going to shorten Silfrenna's name, I'm going to shorten his name. All right. Chapter 6 of The Sunlit Man.
But I specifically haven't done that today.
You're not Bruh. All right, Airsick Lowlander, except he's not low and he's not landy. That might have something to do with Numuhuku Makiaki Ayalunamore. I don't remember. Need more power for a skip sandwich. Gappy, I thought you died last week. Sigzil is no longer allowed to do math. What a sad day for that guy. Why is this guy called Nomad? Seems like all the other people are nomads. I'm the tall one now. Ox can be a magnet? Wait. Is this Twilight Princess?
Yeah.
Well, Mike's going to have to explain that one. Nomad can't rogue. Nomad can absorb batteries. We've seen gravitational batteries. Is there a way to convert that to investiture? Menacing Sigzil. Night Brigade. Gappy is suspiciously good at regaining consciousness. Dropped a gun. Whoopsie.
Okay. So we are escaping. We are actively escaping. Nomad is holding a shield behind the driver so that the driver doesn't get shot. Unfortunately, the people that are shooting at them are not trying to shoot the driver. They're trying to shoot the I think, just like power core of the vehicle.
Yeah.
That wasn't, maybe it was clear, I don't know, just, it didn't seem to actually matter.
Well, they shot it open and then he started blocking it with his shield. He's like, oh, okay. I should probably block that.
Anyway, as they gain altitude, he's like, wow, this is actually pretty nice up here. Maybe I was airsick below. Nope. No, definitely not. And then he and Nomad and Auxiliary examine the battery while they're being shot at. And Auxiliary's right, like, yeah, you could probably eat one of these. In fact, I have a diagram showing what it would look like if you ate 5 of these. Okay, I think Dave's posting it.
Dave is furiously looking it up.
Oh, I made it an emote.
Yes, wonderful. But no, one of those batteries should be about 10% to skip level. Yes, eating one battery, eating 5 batteries. If you don't get that reference, I cannot help you. I'm sorry. Anyway, yeah, he's about a tenth of the way to skip level, which means that he can now start to understand language being spoken through connection tricks, which apparently take a few minutes to set up.
How many Brandon Sanderson units was that again? Craig, what's the math?
He needs 20,000 for a skip. So 10% would be about 2,000 breaths.
Okay.
Roughly.
They're not breaths, they're pews!
That's... Yeah, sorry. Pew.
Brandon Sanderson units.
Yeah, so they're having a whole conversation about that, and then the guy in the back who they rescued at the last second through daring heroics is passed out from the pain, but then he wakes up, I guess.
Cappy!
Sigzel is no longer allowed to do math. I have no idea.
He was talking about how he was thinking how the planet worked. There's some science going on. And he's like, no. That's not me anymore. So he stopped himself from asking questions and thinking science-related stuff about what's happening.
Except he then starts it immediately afterward, because that's all he does.
You can't stop the math, Mike.
Yeah. Why is this guy called Nomad? Seems like all the other people are nomads. Yeah, the group that he helped rescue part of, that they're taking him back to their base, they are apparently themselves nomads. Potentially from Threnody, based on the names.
He calls himself Nomad, but yes, they're also nomads.
That was a joke, though, because he jumps around to different planets, so it makes sense for him to call himself Nomad. But, I mean, everybody that lives on this planet is a nomad, because you can't settle in one place.
Actually, that was just a coincidence, Dave. I don't know if you caught this one. He's called Nomad because he doesn't like it when he gets angry.
Right, because of the curse, he's not allowed to punch people. So yeah. He doesn't want to get angry.
No, mad. Yeah.
And he just keeps telling people, you wouldn't like it, or you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. And then people just never make him angry, so they don't find out what happens.
Why isn't he like a French advertising firm that comes up with names for people?
I am not allowing that. No. Bad Dave.
Mad.
Anyway, he's taller than everybody. He's used to being shorter because the Alethi are, like, giants. Freakishly tall giants. But here, he's the tall one. Aux can be a magnet. Yes, he has Aux turn into a magnet boot. I don't know why magnet boot rather than clampy boot. That would have been my go-to.
Because he wanted to make the Twilight Princess reference, where you put on the iron boots and you walk around the magnet walls.
I don't think I got that far in Twilight Princess.
It's like the second dungeon. It might even be the first dungeon.
Then I definitely got that far in Twilight Princess, but I don't remember it.
Remember, because you need the iron boots to sumo wrestle the big Goron dude, and then you use the iron boots to, like, end that dungeon on Death Mountain, I think.
Okay, the first word that you just said, remember? No. No, I do not.
Don't you remember the dog?
All right, let's move on. Let's continue on.
Nomad can't rogue. I assume you're referring to the fact that he does not have the power to absorb mutant powers through skin contact.
Yeah.
I don't know why you're bringing it up, but no, he can't do that.
Yeah. Well, there's a part that mentions how he likes potential energy, not kinetic energy. So if someone shoots an energy blast at him, he can't just slurp it up and convert it.
So he's Gambit. He's not negative Gambit. Or no, Gambit gives up kinetic energy.
He charges the cards, makes him go boom. You would get that line if you had seen Deadpool and Wolverine.
I do need to watch that.
Nomad can absorb batteries. We've seen gravitational batteries. Is there a way to convert that to investiture? Sort of. We actually saw that in the same book that we saw the gravitational batteries, which is the gauntlet thing that Kaladin was wearing during the occupation of Urithiru. That's a Fabrial. That is investiture, friend.
Okay. I guess what I meant to ask is, can we use the energy from a gravitational battery to store investiture?
Can Sigzil eat a falling rock? Yes, I understand. Mm-hmm. And the answer is probably a little bit. It's probably not very efficient or useful, but probably a little bit. And then Ada is wearing an adorable outfit. I don't even know how to describe it. Hi!
It's a rainbow unicorn outfit. She's a rainbow unicorn.
I don't see no horn.
Well, it's on the couch.
I see wings.
The TV
you
show?
You should eat your...
Yeah, with Thomas Hayden Church.
Go ask mommy. Sorry.
Night Brigade. We get more mention of the Night Brigade. We still haven't had an explanation of the Night Brigade.
The people that are trying to kill... Maybe that's like Galadon and Teemo are like part of the Night Brigade.
I certainly hope not.
The 17th Shard, the Night Brigade, the Knight of Sorrows.
Shard?
The Knight of Sorrows. One of them is like the European nobility one. The other one is like the absence of daylight.
So in chapter 10, we get a little bit of info about the Night Brigade.
Gappy is suspiciously good at regaining consciousness. Yeah, the guy in the back wakes up. Then...
How?
And then Sigzil drops a gun. Whoopsie. Oh no, the gun's gone forever.
Are you telling me Gappy just won his death saving throw without any assistance?
It happens sometimes. It's like a 55% chance. Because isn't it like a 10 or higher is a success?
According to the Dimension 20 that I've seen, that I think they were playing 5th Dimension. Or I think they were playing 5th Edition. I think you need to get an 11 three times, but a natural 20 is an instant win, and a natural 1 is an instant you die, I think.
Okay, then it's a 50-50 each time, but it's 3 wins or 3 losses, so it breaks down to just a lot of 50% chances.
Yeah, you were right the first time, 55% three times, which I think, I don't know. If only I had a brother that was a statistician, or I could do the math, actually. All right, continuing on. Oh, did we finish chapter 6?
Yeah.
Oh. All right, then. Continuing on. 7th of the Sunlit Man. So who runs the evil weather machine on this planet? Nomad walks back his assumption. Okay. I think I did mean to write that. It's just an awkward way to phrase it, but it probably was referencing how it's worded in the book. All right, moving on. 7th of the Sunlit Man. So who runs the evil weather machine on this planet? Nomad walks back his assumptions. Is Rebecca Salvage related to Nikki Savage? We already established that Rebecca has a sister, after all, and a dead brother named Divinity. This is starting to sound like a prologue. Thomas McGappy. Thomas? Thermos? Thomas? Thomas? Thomas McGappy. Rebecca Michigan J. Frog's Nomad's Usefulness.
What?
yeah, that was annoying. I had a feeling that lady was a witch and or werewolf. Zeal Shortman. I wonder if they only have one language here. Kind of makes sense. Adelnalsium will remember our plate eventually, Tallman. All rope for short. The greater good is three hags. The greater good is three hags. Okay.
The greater good.
The claw.
Okay, so in the movie, not Shaun of the Dead, the other one.
The Incredibles.
Hot Fuzz. Yes, Hot Fuzz. Whenever someone says the greater good, everyone else repeats afterward, the greater good.
Yarp.
Narp. So who runs the evil weather machine?
I am the greatest good you will ever have from the Incredibles.
I did say to someone this morning the Z word, like the phrase the Z word. I said, don't say the Z word or something like that.
So who runs the evil weather machine on this planet? I think it's just the sun, the weird sun they have.
No. Wrong. There's a guy who lives on the rings on one of the asteroids that's just hanging out there, and he just think it's hilarious to make the storm just follow
the sun. Craig, you didn't let me finish. I was saying the son of the Stormfather. He moved here.
Oh, Well, maybe that's the same person then.
There's weird weather here where, like, sunlight just fully obliterates everything on the light side of the planet, and it rotates relatively quickly, and there's this massive storm on the dusk end of that. But according to how Sigzel thinks it should work, is the whole planet should be just a massive uninhabitable storm. And I'm pretty sure that there's no way they can get rid of enough heat to make up for how hot the direct sunlight is. So the whole world should just be baked, like significantly hotter than it is. I don't know. I'm sure there's funky magic happening to fix it. Nomad walks back his assumptions. He assumes that it should be a horrible, horrible storm planet-wide that should kill everyone and prevent anyone from ever living here in the first place, but that clearly isn't the case, so he must be wrong. And then there's... Dave pronounced her name Rebecca. I'm not sure that that's accurate, but I don't have Tori here to check.
Oh, well, I can help. I also say Rebecca.
So that's definitely not it.
Oh, no.
It's spelled Rebiki.
Rafiki.
Well, we're not going to know until next week.
Rebishi.
Yeah. But Rebiki Salvage, who possibly is related to Nikki Salvage.
I'm just thinking Rafiki from Lion King. She is now Rafiki. That is my casting.
Yeah, just, you know. Let me post a GIF really quick. In there. That's the one.
Yep. There it is.
We find out that she went on this mission to rescue her sister who got cinder stabbed, and also her brother died on the mission. So plus one, minus one. This is starting to sound like a prologue. Is it because we're being introduced to a bunch of characters? I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I think that's what Dave was getting at.
Terminology and things.
Okay. We find out that Megappy's name is Thomos. It's probably pronounced Thomas, but it's spelled Thomos. So he shall remain Megappy. Rebiki, when asked about Nomad Sigdal's usefulness, apparently didn't see anything, despite being there and looking for like large chunks of his actual useful actions.
Yeah, Mike understands the reference.
But yeah, no, she's like, no, he didn't do anything useful. He's not a fighter. And he's still, Nomad at this point is still pretending not to understand or speak language yet. So he can't react to that. But internally, he's like very upset that he isn't getting credit for the things he just did. Like, turning away two much more powerful ships that were chasing them. Crashing one. I had a feeling that lady was a witch and or werewolf. This is where we find out that Nomad believes that, based on the names, these are Threnodites. Folks from Threnody, which is, as you may recall, the witches and werewolves planet. Despite not ever seeing a witch or a werewolf in our one journey to that world.
Yeah, but that's the title of the book that I decided.
Yeah. Zeal Shortman. There's a guy named Zeal. He's short. He gets all up in Nomad's, I would say face, but it's actually more like nipple.
Right in there.
Yeah. I wonder if they only have one language here, kind of makes sense. Definitely on this one, like, group of ship things, but I don't know about the other one, because he didn't have language yet, because he was out of pew juice.
I wonder how Nomad's power would work, if he would be able to tell. If people, like two different people were speaking different languages, maybe like he could find clues through idioms and things like that, but it might be actually hard for him to tell.
So
unless it's something he can suppress.
We know it's he's based connected on where to the planet, but
no, it's more than that. It's based on like the locality. So in most cases it's just the country. But in this case I think it's working based on the ship.
So if I went to Germany, I could use Investiture to understand German, but not Japanese.
Correct.
Oh.
But if you go to Japan, then you could do so because you'd be connected to the locality.
Yeah.
What if my locality is Google Translate?
Well, then you're using technology that does connection tricks.
Thanks, Dalinar.
And they've got nodes in every country, so they can just do it automatically.
Noodles.
Next, we're introduced to the coolest named character in the Cosmere. This guy is a personal hero of mine based on 5 chapters that I read today. Ad nauseum will remember our plight eventually. Who is Tall? That's what we know about him. That's his name, and he's Tall.
That must be why I gave him the last name, Tallman.
And then he, Nomad, is taken to the Greater Good. The Greater Good.
The Greater Good.
Which, it turns out, is just 3 old women.
We can sync those up when we edit the episode.
It's much better this way, the Greater Good.
The Greater Good.
Craig?
No. Not doing it.
Doesn't sound like you're all that interested in the Greater Good.
Well, Craig hates Simon Pegg.
I actually have not seen that one. I do like them. I am a fan of Shaun of the Dead. I have to watch Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz is held by many fans of Edgar Wright as his best movie. I disagree. I think it's Shaun of the Dead. But it is very, very good.
Okay.
But that is the end of Chapter 7.
So what did you think, Craig? Is it in your top 7 chapters of this book so far?
Yes.
How about top 8? Is it in your top 8 chapters of this book so far?
Yes, I would also say that. If it's in top 7, then by definition, it's also within the top 8.
Dave, have you been sitting on that since Mistborn? Just waiting for an excuse to use that?
16? What? That's your joke. I just stole your joke.
Chapter 8.
Anyway, I don't know what you mean. The 8th? The chapter 8. Moving on. 8th of the Sunlit Man. The old women aren't wearing anything, Regal. Contemplation said the title. Pack it in, team. Metal disc with a Skadrian symbol. Malwish metal mind? Apparently it's an authorization, Kate, but...
It could be a metal mind, though. Like, that might be how it works.
What? Skadrians have starships? Into the storm. That's the end of 8th of the Sunlit
Man. I'm glad you read that, because I could not make out what that said.
I mean, I'm better at reading my own handwriting than other people are at reading it.
So, everybody is apparently dressed like it's the real world of the Matrix, so not well, including the Greater Good. The Greater Good.
The Greater Good.
Contemplation said the title. There's a character named Contemplation. It's one of the old ladies who is the Greater Good. The Greater Good. The Greater Good. And she called Nomad a sunlit man after learning that he was in the sunlight for a very, very short amount of time and didn't explode.
Didn't explode.
Excellent. So yeah, we got a title drop. Then we learned that the actual reason for the raid was going after this metal disc with Skadrian symbols. Which Dave cued into possibly being a Malwish metal mind. We may be past the idea of, like, northern and southern Skadrians being separate in any meaningful way at this point in the timeline, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
starships, maybe, yeah. Could be.
But yeah, I actually agree. I think it's probably an unkeyed metal mind that's function is to let people through a door by basically giving them the right identity or something. However that would work.
Also, they hate plastic. We are told that they like metal for some weird reason.
They have a fetish.
They do have a fetish.
I think was the word. They have a metal fetish.
Write these words in metal because plastic sucks and you don't want microplastics in your food.
Yeah, that's exactly what was in the book. That's what I remember.
But yeah, we find out that Skadrians are regularly visiting places with starships. And finally we go into the storm. Nomad walks out into the honestly kind of light rain.
Yeah, it's just like a light rain. It's not a big deal. He's had worse.
Which is nowhere near as impressive as Dalinar like going out into the last chunk of a high storm. Like not the safe part of the last chunk of a high storm, the still quite dangerous part of the last chunk of a high storm to go find his knife.
Okay.
Well, Dalinar is the storm in Kaladin's boots.
I forgot about that particular scene until you mentioned it, but it does make me have more respect for Kaladin somehow surviving while, like, he's strung up. Like, Dalinar could just move around. He was strung up through the whole entire storm.
Please, that's just because Silfrenna kicked some death sprint butt.
If you don't think that Dalinar was held back by his enormous biceps, then I just don't think that you know anything about physical fitness, Craig.
Yeah, if you can grate cheese on these abs, then they're certainly sharp enough to wedge through wind.
Chapter the one after 8.
Ninth of the Sunlit Man. Never skimp on footwear. Nomad must have learned this from Kaladin. Nomad had plenty of chance to get a showered. Who taught Nomad to be a piece of garbage? Couldn't have been Hoyd. Cider King. I think that's supposed to be
that's Cinder King, but no, it is now Cider King.
I honestly don't even know if I wrote that on purpose or not. It was too long ago.
It's official now. You can't change it.
I could see myself writing that on purpose, but I could also see autocomplete Spren writing that. But, like, I just don't know. Maybe Ruin actually changed it. Who's this orb dude? Oh, it's just Wit. I was hoping for Hoyd. That's it?
So, back to the Cider King. I bet he's really great to hang out with in fall, right? Like, he always has some handy. Just, if you need a delicious apple drink, he's there for you. All right, never skimp on footwear. Nomad at this point is wearing not a lot, and most of it is ragged, but his boots are really nice.
So he's that level one character. You just start playing a game, and they have all the grungy, ragged clothes that once you open up a chest, you're like, ooh, iron, I'll put that on, and then you get a buff. That's what's happening right there.
Yes, he is quite buff. Good catch, Craig.
Well, they also
it actually was mentioned earlier that because his clothes are all ragged, they can tell that he is like built to the rafters. In addition to being tall, quite muscular.
It's like he was training to be some sort of soldier at one point.
Oh, and he says that his muscles are through actual hard work and not just as a result of investiture. So presumably he has met Pewter Ferrucamus. Anyway. Nomad had plenty of chance to get a showered. when he finally catches
butt. Why did you say it like that?
Because that's how you wrote it.
Nah.
Anyway, when he finally catches back up with Auxiliary, who we will not mention what Auxiliary was doing yet. Ox is like, you left me out in the rain, and then you also apparently came out into the rain. He's like, yeah, I needed a shower. So apparently, Nomad has been pretty stinky throughout the entire beginning of this book. We have to then retroactively assume that even though it wasn't said, he smelled really bad in every single scene.
Yep. Yep.
I wonder if he, like, just recently skipped from some garbage planet.
The characters do react to this. It's not like he's the only one. Once he can understand what they're saying, they talk about how stinky he is.
We did see him fall in a bunch of mud, though.
Anyway, the thing Auxiliary was doing was holding on to the gun underneath the sky motorcycle that I've decided this thing is called. So now Nomad has a gun that he can't use and a wet, cranky, emotionless dead Spren and a shower. And who taught Nomad to be a piece of garbage? Couldn't have been Hoyd. It wasn't.
No way.
No. Nomad has had many teachers and only one of those was Hoyd.
Yeah.
Then we learned that there is a Cider King.
Cinder King.
I legitimately don't remember if this was mentioned at any point before in the previous chapters, because again, it has been an extremely long time since we last recorded, and thus an extremely long time since I last read. So this could be new information, or we could just be getting a rehash. I don't know.
Nomad just referred to him as, like, the dude with the red eyes before, or something like that.
And then Nomad gets a visit from, I'm not sure how this works, but Hoyd is talking to him without physically being there.
He's connected to him.
Through a connection of, but...
Through Auxiliary. He, like, turned on the connection
it's
between
like
him
Sion.
And
Hoyd. It's like the Sion communication that we've seen before.
Okay, is Auxiliary a dead Sion? Is that a thing?
No, he's a Spren, but Spren and Sions are not that different.
We haven't ever seen a Spren do this, though.
Correct.
This is a brand new thing.
Yes.
Maybe it's something only...
And I'm like, I'm asking questions about it, and Craig's just like, no, nothing that you're saying is important, because none of this is new.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's... Your question was, how's he doing this? And my answer is, it's like how Sions... do the communication, the telephony thing. So it would be similar to that.
Anyway, Hoyd's there, and he's annoying.
So Hoyd.
Like, Nomad is quite explicitly done with his hoidiness. Like, he's been complaining about Hoid the entire 9 chapters that we've had so far of this book. And Hoid actually shows up and he's like, nope.
Look, he's saying what I've been thinking for many books.
You don't like Hoid either?
I don't trust Hoid.
See, now, Nomad used to be hoity-toity back when he was like a stuck-up accountant guy. And then he just became Hoity. So if he isn't Hoity anymore, then is he just Toity?
Or
is
no, he lost the Toity. Thing? So he lost the Hoity. So now he's nothing.
He can't go back to being Toity?
I think it requires effort.
Okay.
So anyway, Hoid starts a story. He gets half a sentence in, and Nomad's like, nope, walking away, completely done.
I do like that response. It's like, no, like, you're just going to do a story. It's probably fabricated. No.
Remember that time Kaladin threw Chekhov's Picard's flute, like, into the chasm and forgot about it?
Yeah, that was great.
He likes to bring it up only every time now. Actually, I guess Nomad brings it up this time, though, because he mentions flute.
Chapter the next one.
This is the last of the Sunlit Man for this week. Chapter 10. I accidentally punched my Kindle and now I need a new one. Well, that sucks. Dawn Shard, you only live N times. Every torment is a blessing, even wits. Did someone mention Aeon Door? That was smart of Nomad to accidentally leave the door ajar so he could find it again. And finally, he can talk!
Okay, so despite Nomad being fully done with Hoid, they actually do have a conversation. Hoid's like, yeah, at one point I was a stupid kid and I wanted to know what the stars were. And Nomad's like, I don't care. You were never a child. You're terrible and I hate you. And Hoid's like, well, I was worried about you. He's like, no, you weren't. You had every opportunity to come check on me so many times. Like, hey, remember that time when I almost got killed by arrows 1,000 times? No? No, because you weren't there. Oh, but you were. You were literally right there. And you did nothing. And this goes on for a while. And Hoid's like, keep asking questions. And Nomad's like, screw you, Dad. And then I think we find out that that Nomad is holding a Dawn Shard, and that's why the Night Brigade is after him? Kind of, sort of. There's like one line that implies that.
Is that
what's going on?
Yeah, you're not off. I don't... He's not currently holding the Dawn Shard, but he has held it at one point.
Anyway, they eventually run out of things to hate each other about, and they're like... And Nomad's like, this torment sucks. And Hoid's like, yeah, it sure does. So does mine. But they're actually great.
You have to always look on the bright side of life.
This is not... What was that from? The Life of Brian?
I think so.
Yeah, this is not that. Anyway, Nomad gets tired of having a pointless conversation, so he goes in to talk to people who don't think he speaks their language, and he's like, I speak your language! And if you give me that disc, I can go take you to your safe place that totally exists and that I believe is real.
First, he's like, busted! I heard you talking about how stinky I am. How could you? Secondly, this thing. That's totally what happened.
End of chapters.
I didn't have time to figure out that death roll chance, but I'll get back to you.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
Chapters were way easier with bullet points. Let's do it like this from now on.
Yeah. I have bullet points of my own, though.
I conquer.
Yeah, let's... If you guys want, I can get into them. I've highlighted... This is stuff I highlighted during my first read. So, okay. It's not necessarily spoilers. It's things I found interesting. Trying to learn about the world. So, why is this one not showing up? And maybe there was something to be said for the thinner air up here. Maybe he had been, after all, a little bit airsick. Nah, that was going too far. Of course I'm going to highlight that. Okay. This one begin. Above, the rings of the planet appeared to have moved in the sky, but they hadn't moved, actually. Nomad's ship was flying forward so fast it dramatically shifted the angle of the rings from his perspective. They were not only outpacing the rotation of the planet, but changing their orientation compared to stellar bodies. Storms. They weren't... This is the math thing that you're talking about. They weren't flying that fast. How small must this planet be if flying a short time could round it so quickly? Okay, and then he's talking about the torment relaxing a little. Nomad missed the days of inflection in that voice as he talked about auxiliary. Aux might have started their relationship hesitant to throw his true self, to show his true self, but after decades together, his expressiveness had grown and grown until that day. Okay. Continuing chapter 6, I'm like, I have a lot. You might have to tell me to show up at some point. He'd noticed that people here were on average shorter than those of his homeworld. He often felt short compared to the towering Alethi, but here he was the tall one. He smiled with relief, raised the energy core to his face, and breathed it in. See chat. It had taken him months to get the trick of that. He was certain that this breathing in part was purely psychological, but it somehow facilitated the action. Being able to feed on investiture was an after effect of the burden he'd once carried. So, this is an answer to your question, Mike. He once carried the burden. The thing that had given him his torment. He needed a power source that was potential, not kinetic. Scientific terms that, in this case, meant he was extremely good at leeching batteries or other stable sources of investiture. However, something like an energy blast being shot at him, or unfortunately the power of the sun, wouldn't work. Too intense, too kinetic. It was also storming difficult for him to get investiture out of a person, so he's not rogue, or another living being requiring very unique circumstances. Which I suspect means they have to have Nalthian breath, and they have to be able to give it to him. Okay, he's thinking about Roshar because of the storms, a place he missed terribly but could never visit again, lest he lead the Night Brigade to people who loved him. So in answer to your question from earlier, Dave, 17 shards already on Roshar. So they know about Roshar, they're on it. That's why...
Isn't that the Coppermind wiki? Is that like a thing?
It's both.
There is a form called the 17 Shard, and that's who the group in the books are named after. But they're made up of characters that we know, like Demo, Galadon. They're all...
I know them.
I would call them good guys. Like, they were definitely on the good end of the spectrum when we read the books.
Hold on. Craig?
Yeah?
Demo, Galadon, and... Band? There we go.
See, I remember one of the characters. Did you, Mike?
I actually had forgotten. That was why I was asking you.
This was how connection worked. What Auxiliary was doing would make his soul think he'd been raised on this planet, so its language came as naturally to him as his own once had. So he has a connection, but it replaces his native language. So he's still able to speak in Alethi, because he learned that language after, when he was older. So it just comes out as gibberish. So only his native language comes off as whatever the place or planet happens to be.
So if you are bad at speaking your first language, connection tricks won't make you bad, or won't make you good at speaking another language.
I would still mispronounce things even with connection tricks. It's just a fact of life. Chapter 7. That required him to reorient how he'd been viewing this all. Sun rises in the west here, behind us, chasing us. That's different, because sun rises on the east here, and you're trying to run away from it too, no less. A little bit different. Well,
hold on.
Yeah.
Does that mean that he's aware of where magnetic north is on this planet? Because otherwise, east-west are arbitrary.
Well, yeah, so he looks at a compass. Let's see. He glanced at the dash in front of him, which had a compass as one of its readings. So whatever they did for their compass, it's oriented such that the sun rises in the west. It's like you said, Mike, it could just be that they decided to choose the opposite pole. And that's just what they get. Like, that's fine. But how they've decided... So when he talks to other people, if he mentions Wes, then he's basically talking about the direction that the sun rises in. So it is important for him to orient himself the same that other people would do so. Okay. So talking about the people here with Auxiliary, based on their name, Threnodites, the knight replies, modestly confident in his wise assessment, an entire offshoot culture. Didn't expect that, did you? No, but I should have, he said. The clothing is similar. Wonder how long ago they diverged. Perhaps this group split off before the Shard's death, and the event's after effects took them. So there's a little bit of talk about Threnodites, and we've seen them. We've been into their werewolf land.
Yeah.
Ghosts and werewolves, and it's, they died.
There's no ghosts on that planet.
They're spirits. They're like ghosts. As soon as you die, boom, spirit. Unless you do something, I forget, it's been so long since I read the book. Like, don't you have to, do something to the body to prepare it so it doesn't just turn into a shade? Something? I don't know. Anyway, the point is, that just happens to Threnodites. So, As far as Nomad can tell here, it's not happening. So perhaps they, you know, diverged before the... But and that's also confirmation about what we know about before. The fact that Ambition was killed, or I guess the way it was killed, definitely had an effect to the way Threnodites become Shades when they die. Like, there's a lot of an effect there. That was an awkward sentence. Okay, well, I'm going to move on. And then I highlighted the name. Ad nauseam will remember our plight eventually. that's a name. It reminds you of those weird, like, 16th and early 17th century names.
Thou shalt not commit adultery, Pulsifer?
Yes, thank you, Mike. Exactly. Exactly. Which I think that's the intention, right? That's what he's going
for. Yeah, that's explicitly what was going on there. Said in the, like, intro to Shadows for Silence in the Forest of Witches and Werewolves.
I really do need to read that again. Old women, that wasn't as exciting as he'd hoped, but hey, maybe one was secretly a dragon. Like, is that to us? Is that Brandon saying, hey, maybe one's a dragon? Like, because, you know, we're sort of expecting it at this point, given the other secret projects. I don't know. Continuing.
That's good.
Oh! Like, you missed the other best name, Jeffrey. Nomad liked that one, too. Hey, Ox, he said in Alethi. What do you... Oh, wait, right. Auxiliary wasn't around. The guy's name is Jeffrey. All of them ignored that, however, as Zeal unwrapped the metal disc almost as wide as a man's palm with an odd symbol on the front, one that Nomad could read, but which he absolutely hadn't expected to find on this planet. Storms. What were Skadrians doing here? I'll just keep going. The theft of this item, which he knew for a fact to be a Skadrian authorization key, plastic key cards were, of course, eschewed by them. They had a fetish for metal. Talked about that. Okay, almost done. This was a modern device born by Skadrian surveyors to let them be located and give them authorization to return to one of their small exploratory starships. So based on what we know so far, Skadrians have a starship. They send out some kind of scout or surveyor that must land on the planet because they know that there's a way to access this, but there should be a way to return to space. Okay. What's this one? Being forced for survival. Move. What? Was it possible that being forced to always move, being forced to work together for survival, had forged them into a society that didn't have time to kill one another? That perhaps this planet had created people who weren't weak, that son surely would not abide weakness, but who also valued life. So I would say that's a good sentiment, but it's not what we've seen in the first five chapters, because there was that big, like, oh, let's fight to the death in the arena, and, you know, if you happen to survive, we're just going to chuck you into the sun. So the Cider King, at least, doesn't abide by that.
No, he abides by delicious, hot, steamy apple beverages.
Yes. Auxiliary, Nomad demanded, did you reinforce my connection to Wit when you were playing with my soul earlier? Then we get a picture of Wit. The Night Brigade is out there hunting me because of what you did to me. You may have saved the Cosmere. I absolutely did not save the Cosmere, Nomad snapped, finding a pebble in his pocket and throwing it through Wit's head. The image rippled and then restored. I might have saved you, though. Same difference. If they catch me, they'll be able to connect the Dawn Shard to you, and then they'll be on your tail. And then talking about Wit's history, it wasn't often, this is his reaction to it. It wasn't often that you could stab one with a knife that hurt, took familiarity, and truth, two things Wit was far too good at avoiding. Okay. Yet here I am, millennia later, walking between the stars, learning each one. I got my answers eventually. Yet I'd guess that by now you see more of the Cosmere than I have. So it's a blessing, Nomad asked, gesturing to himself. This torment you've given me? Every torment is, Wit said, even mine. Okay. He expected a wisecrack from Auxiliary, but the Spren stayed silent as well. Don't know why I highlighted that one, but there you go. And that is it. Hooray.
Neat.
Yay.
See?
The greater good.
The greater good.
TGG.
cool. So I know it's
all
been
right,
a bit.
What do we do now?
I think we end, because I'm not doing a spoiler time by myself.
Aw.
What if Dave and I do a spoiler time by ourselves?
Then we have to edit the episode.
You
want to
kick me off? Like, Craig's not onto us at all. All right. I think I'm done.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for watching.
Good night.
Goodbye, Internet.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.